Coffee is a drink brewed by pouring hot water over the roasted and ground beans of a tree from the tropical highlands. Dr. America's cup of breakfast coffee, therefore, involves him in the international commodity market. By volume, coffee is second only to oil as a commodity in international trade, as 3/4 of all coffee produced moves from one country to another. The United States is the ultimate destination of 1/3 of the coffee beans produced in the world, and coffee is the largest single food item imported into the United States. But why would anyone in the tropics choose to send coffee beans to Americans to help them get started in the morning? The answer varies from country to country, but essentially it percolates down to what Michael Harrington calls the development of underdevelopment. Over the past few centuries, the dominant countries of Europe and North America have colonized native peoples in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, and maintained their underdevelopment so that we can have cheap coffee and bananas and cotton and sugar and computers and cars. For Dr. America and for many Americans, coffee is the staple part of breakfast, a meal in which, according to the word's etymology, we break our fast from the evening before. But fasting, in the sense of a deliberate and often religious abstention from food, is not much a part of American consumer culture, except in the case of a diet, which is another cultural phenomenon. So perhaps we should keep the word breakfast, but change its derivation. Perhaps we should think of breakfast as the meal at which we break fast from the starting gate into the race of life. In this sense, the stimulation of coffee makes perfect sense. A cup of coffee usually contains 40 to 180 milligrams of caffeine. The caffeine in coffee dilates blood vessels in the brain, stimulates nerve cells in the gastric glands, speeds intestinal movement, and increases the work done by the heart. It is mainly a stimulant, although as Dr. America can attest from experience, coffee is also an efficient diuretic. The caffeine makes coffee a crucial component of America's drug culture, as coffee is one of the drugs, like alcohol, that meet with social approval. It is a performance drug, like speed and steroids, which are also popular these days, and it fits well into a system that rewards performance. We live in a culture which thinks that the human condition is ultimately conditional, and so we drink coffee and ingest other drugs to condition ourselves to feel or perform the way we want to. Americans drink 400 million cups of coffee a day, 29 million of them at work, usually at coffee breaks. The coffee break is the time when we take a break from work to drink coffee and converse with coworkers. To Dr. America, the break in the work is probably as revealing as the coffee itself, because it is a cultural construction that tells us about our attitudes toward work. Why, we might logically ask, do we need a break from work? Dr. America thinks that most Americans work not so much for the joy of working, but for the pay. He notes that we seldom say, "Thank God it's Monday." The coffee break, therefore, is our break from the alienations of the job. It serves as free space for workers to speak to each other as whole persons, to discuss the human dimensions of the job, and to become as much of a community as time and company culture allow. Coffee plays a ritual role in many other subcultures of sociability in American culture. The coffee klatch, for example, is stereotypically the locus for neighborhood gossip. But as Sarah Ruddick suggests, it is a place for maternal thinking, in which conversations about the joys and sorrows of parenting reinforce the community's values of care and nurturing and training. Because the coffee klatch has traditionally depended on women working mainly at home, it has become an endangered institution in a modern America of two career families. Coffee, says cleric Jim Berklow, is also a permanent fixture of Christian orthodoxy. Church congregations may celebrate the official liturgy with bread and wine, but they congregate afterward for another liturgy of coffee and donuts. Berklow asks, why do more Americans go to church than Europeans? Here's his answer. It is certainly not because our worship is more meaningful. It is because coffee hour is as much a feature of our social landscape as shopping malls, fast food, and baseball. America is set up in such a way that people need coffee hour. Everyday life takes us in a dozen different directions, but the sacrament of coffee brings us together again. Berklow also claims that the people who drink the coffee tend to be the people who run the church, because their conversations embody their care for the institution. Like the coffee break, the Sunday coffee hour creates a counterpoint to the isolating individualism of American life. Finally, perhaps because of its effects on the chemistry of the brain, coffee is often associated with thinking and intellectual life, and even with college professors. The coffee houses of Europe, of Greenwich Village, of San Francisco, have historically been the base for intellectual subcultures of Western society. And so, if it's okay with you, perhaps we should stop here for at least an imaginary cup of coffee. From the American Studies Museum, this is Dr. America, good to the last drop.